Welcome to Rhode Island Avenue Radio, where we'll talk about news, education, and opportunities for small businesses on the Rhode Island Avenue Main Street and in Washington, D.C. I'm Michelle Yancey.
And I'm Kyle Todd. Welcome to Rhode Island Avenue Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to another episode of Rhode Island Avenue Radio. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Kyle. How are you?
Good, good. And yourself?
I'm doing well.
Good.
I'm glad that it's not raining the moment.
It is a perfect day out there now on this Friday that we're recording the episode. Hello to Rodney on the board back there, Mr. Mastermind behind the board. So we have a couple of great new Rhode Island Avenue businesses as guests today.
The exciting thing is they're both actually on Rhode Island Avenue.
Yeah, so. And they're brand new, so can't wait to talk to them about their businesses. And learn more about what they've got going on. But first, as always, we want to thank our sponsors, the Department of Small and Local Business Development, the Department of Housing and Community Development. It is grants from those two DC agencies that help us put on this show, and they help us provide grants and services to all the small businesses on Rhode Island Avenue. So thank you to Department of Small and Local Business Development and Department of Housing and Community Development. So we've got, a volunteer opportunity that has, come up. We were given, a really nice grant from the organization called LISC. It stands for Local Initiative Support Corporation, to allow us to purchase, 14 or 15 jumbo outdoor planters. And Annie's Ace Hardware came in and donated soil and some starter flowers to go in it to be delivered when we're ready for them. And so we're going to have a call for volunteers for a big planting day one Saturday very soon. We've got our businesses lined up to have some planters outside the businesses to kind of spruce up the avenue a little bit. So please stay tuned for that announcement for volunteer help on that. We'd love to get everybody out there helping us to make a difference in the way Rhode Island Avenue looks as you walk past or drive past or bike past.
That'll be great. And that's a great opportunity for some of the high school kids to make their community service hours.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. We'll talk about that later on. And I also want to put out a reminder to everybody that another version of the federal budget has been dropped. And as I was reading through some of the analysis of it the other day, once again, the president's version of the budget includes tremendous cuts, like actually pretty much gutting. Several of the major grants that we use from the federal level down through the DC level to provide economic development services to our small businesses. They are the community development block grants. They are the economic development block grants. They are assistance to small and minority businesses, minority owned businesses. This is just my gentle reminder that we depend on those grants to function, as do many of the assistance organizations here in D.C. that help small businesses, other Main Streets, other economic development organizations. And so if those actually go away, that's going to really, really impact our ability to deliver services, like to the point of, well, we won't be able to deliver services. So please reach out to the various members of Congress that you may have a relationship with. For those of you who are listening outside of the District of Columbia that actually have representatives in Congress, voting representatives, and let them know that this is an important part of the budget to keep healthy small economies growing.
Absolutely.
And then I would be absolutely remiss if I did not plug on to the end of that our organization, Rhode Island Avenue Main Street, managed by the Friends of Rhode Island Avenue, is a 501c3 nonprofit. And we encourage and welcome donations to Friends of Rhode Island Avenue to help us close the gap between funding breaches like this, and also to help us expand and do more projects like the Planter Project, things that we can't necessarily get covered by our grants from DSLBD and DHCD, but that make an impact on the community. So you can go to our website, riamainstreet.org, and click on the Donate Now button and give us some love. All right, so let's get on to business. Our first guest today is Brian Dombrowski from Benevolent Tech. Welcome, Brian.
Hey, everybody. Pleasure to be here.
Very good to see you, and welcome to Rhode Island Avenue Main Street.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been nice.
So, how long have you been here?
I've lived in the ward for a few years now, and Ward 5, that is.
Right.
And I started this business as sort of like a vehicle to subcontract at first, but then a year ago, I focused a lot more on business development and building it out as a actual agency business. I can get into more what it does in a second, but I don't know if that's what you asked me right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we need to know what you do. I love the name, Benevolent Tech.
Yeah, where did that come from?
You. I formed this business because I wanted to... So first, let me sort of talk about high level what it is, just because it's probably confusing to say what the meaning behind the name without the reason behind the business. But so what I do is it's a small business. I have a few staff and we provide online marketing and web development mainly to small to medium businesses. We come at it from a different angle than most of other businesses in the area in that me, the founder, has a strong technical background in engineering and we can handle some of those more custom and more challenging software problems that our customers face. So we can do some semi-custom websites and online marketing campaigns, but we can also do some more integrated sort of solutions that can integrate many technologies together to work together seamlessly. So that's kind of what we do. Now, the name Benevolent Tech, I chose that name because working for several agencies over the years, I just felt like they were more focused with delivering exactly what the client asked for, not really much more than that, and not really focusing on actually improving the business of the clients that they work for. So I chose Benevolent Tech because I want our mission to be, we are your partners in success when it comes to online marketing and website development. And we measure our success on your success. In addition to that, as my company continues to grow and we're able to afford it, I plan to donate a percentage of profits to a charity. So when I get a new client, and this is in the future, but when I get a new client, they would choose a charity that they would like a percentage of the profits to go to, and we would donate a percentage of that to the charity.
Oh, I love that idea.
Very cool.
And I think it'd be really cool if, like, and this is in the future, but forming a nonprofit partner company where the money would go into that and we would provide like more technical sort of services as pro bono work too. So they could choose to donate to that nonprofit if they wanted to give back to the neighborhood with like technical services.
You mean like RIA Main Street?
I was thinking that too.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Maybe that would be the best way to go. Honestly,
we got this on.
We've got this on lock. I think this is going to work out.
Yeah. So I really, really care about this neighborhood, and I care about DC, and I care about giving back to the community. So that's kind of the story behind the name, is that, you know, we...
Not just helping your company.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And this is what I love to do, so if I can, like, make ends meet, you know, I don't need to get rich, but I really love doing the work, so...
Very but being cool. Rich wouldn't be too bad.
Well, rich is never bad.
But, no. I do have a question. So the marketing and the website portion are two separate pieces. So if a company came, I'm asking, if a company came to you just needing website development, would that be separate from the marketing aspects that you all do?
So they're kind of together.
Okay.
And there's levers on how much of each you can get. Mm-hmm. And all of our websites include some amount of online marketing, because in my experience, a website's not going to be very successful unless you're coming at it from a marketing perspective.
It makes sense.
A lot of businesses, they wonder why their websites aren't really generating many leads with people coming on their website, or why people aren't really coming to their website. And you kind of need to think about that while you're building the website for it to be successful. Not as an afterthought. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't have to be expensive to include some sort of bare minimum features to do with that. And also come up with like a more long-term plan on how you can continuously improve your online identity with your website and your social media accounts and advertising and all that, those things together.
So when you think about the types of businesses that you would like to work with, or that are optimal for you to work with, what does that look like? Because I mean, there's anything from on Rhode Island Avenue, there's anything from a corner barbershop to a takeout Chinese food place to Neato to SB Works. So there's, you know, there's a wide range of businesses in this market and in every market. So when you think about the types of businesses that you can most effectively help with the way you like to work, what types of businesses are those?
So that's kind of a tricky question. There's kind of two sides of that. There's who would I most benefit my business, and then who do I most want to work with? Do you know what I mean? Those aren't always exactly the same thing. I would say, based on my experience, I would probably be most qualified to work with medium nonprofit agencies, because that's where most of my experience is. But that doesn't mean that that's who I necessarily want to focus all of my attention on right now. Mm-hmm. I do really enjoy working with nonprofits, but I enjoy just as much, maybe even more, working with the small business owner.
Right.
I find that that you can just, there's less bureaucracy, and you can really make a big impact in a short amount of time with some really targeted decision making when it comes to marketing and online development. Yeah. And I really love, I mean, I personally measure my success on the impact I have on the businesses. So being able to see a really, really big measurable boost in the business directly from some of the work that I've done with them, you know, I get personal satisfaction out of that. Mm-hmm. Whereas if it's like a bigger business or medium nonprofit, the margins may not be quite as big, and you also are dealing, it's a lot slower moving because the approval process is a lot longer. So I'd say I really, really, really enjoy working with the smaller businesses, and I am also really, really good at working with nonprofits too. And I enjoy working with them too, especially the smaller nonprofits like you guys.
So what is a small to medium business for you, for your company?
That's a great question, because it's such a loaded term. And when it comes to the government, you know, governments define small businesses as up to, what is it, 700 and something employees?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, many millions of dollars of revenue, which is just crazy, you know?
Yeah.
I would define it more as a business with maybe like three top level senior like directors. If you start getting more than that and you throw boards on top of that, I feel like you're starting bordering on the medium-sized business. And then if you have more than 50 staff, I'd say around 50 staff, then you're really, in my opinion, you're starting to push the medium business territory, because once you hit 50 staff, you really have to rethink your whole human resources strategy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So like 1 to 50 would be a small business for you. And then
in my opinion, yeah. Yeah.
What would be your maximum cap for a medium business for what you offer, for the services that you offer?
You know, that really depends on what they're looking for. you know? And what they expect out of their online identity and stuff like that. That's one great thing about what I do is you can come up with website plans and marketing strategies ranging for bigger companies. So I wouldn't say that like my skill set is really like limited to just small businesses. That's just like considering my bandwidth and the scope of projects.
Right. And the number of people that you have on your staff.
Right. So the medium businesses, it's not that I'm not qualified to work on them. It's more that a lot of times medium businesses have a lot bigger expectations,
right,
and the kind of projects that they want are significantly bigger that it may require, you know, like 5 staff members to be working on that project full time for
a few months, time, right?
You know, and I can't really handle that kind of work right now. Mm-hmm. I could really handle, you know, like I do have like about 4 staff right now, so I can handle 1 staff working full time on a project with, I mean, like 1 equivalent staff. I always have all of like multiple staff working on a single project. Based
but
on
if you
what,
had one dedicated person to...
But like the equivalent number of hours per week, mm-hmm, could be like 1 person full day a week. That's kind of my ideal project right now. I do accept some bigger, some less than that, but I have to actually like manipulate my workforce, you know, to handle bigger loads. And sometimes that takes a little bit of scale up time.
And your workforce consists of you?
I am the leader for sure. I have several contractors that help me that I've sourced over the years and made connections with that can ramp up. They're mostly freelancers or partner agencies, mm-hmm, that can provide significant number of hours towards a project if need be.
So they'll step in when you need them.
Yeah, they're kind of like my scaling mechanism right now.
Yeah, no, that's the whole point I wanted to make was that, you know, I think that's a great model for a business yours, that you've got a whole network of people that you can partner with to bring to bear not only extra hands on a project, but
expertise.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be the first to admit I'm not the best at everything, you know.
Well, and different perspectives on, you know, maybe somebody's got, you know, a strength in one area that another contractor doesn't, so it all balances out.
And this is in addition to your full-time staff.
I actually am the only full-time staff.
But I mean the 3 people that work. You said you had 3 employees.
3 part-time.
3 partner. Okay. Yeah. Well, but so this other network of people are outside of that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, that's terrific.
Yeah. So, I'm working on a big project out of Chicago right now. I like to work DC first, but you know, if I have a great opportunity in another city, I'm going to take it.
Those travel expenses can get written off as business expenses.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've actually scaled up 3 additional Drupal developers for this project. I myself am I would say a 6 out of 10 Drupal developer, like skill wise.
Okay, you're gonna have to tell me what a Drupal is.
Okay, I'm sorry. I live in this world.
Yeah, I have no idea what a Drupal is.
I totally forget. Yeah, it's a framework, like a software for a website. There's lots of different softwares out there. Drupal is like a PHP, like PHP is a language. Mm-hmm. It's a software to build a website that focuses on allowing the end user to edit things themselves.
Oh, okay.
So like,
they you hand it off after you've done the work.
Quote handoff. Yeah.
Kind of.
It's an ongoing process. I mean, you can quote hand it off, but it generally will do a lot better as long as you have like an ongoing relationship. And that's one thing I really try to mention a lot when I'm talking to people thinking about building a website or something like that, is it's really an ongoing thing. And if you just think it's a one-time thing and let it go, then it's not going to meet your goals.
So let's talk about, while we're talking about Drupal, let's talk about different website development tools like that. You know, I'm obviously not a web developer, so correct me as I go along here, but my understanding is that there's, you know, a very significant range of security and accessibility and just flat out attractiveness aspects to different development programs. So you've got the drag and drops that you can get from just about any of your web hosting companies. There's WordPress, there's Squarespace that have a lot of, you know, plug and play modules.
Kyle should do my job.
Well, no, I'm asking for verification here.
I certainly can't, so I'm glad Kyle knows what he's talking about.
There's Joomla that's about the next level up as far as security aspects, and then Drupal. And then the god-awful HTML and all that.
Is you know, as bad as a reputation as HTML may have, HTML, if you have just a basic HTML website, there's not really much to hack because it's so simple.
But oh my God, you know what I mean? It's so complex.
But I mean, you can't, it's not friendly to you, you know? No. That's a big thing is you need to, and that's something that I really make sure is important in all of my projects is focusing on the end user when I'm deciding on software. So that's one thing about my company is we've developed a sort of software agnostic workflow to building websites, and we've done a lot of research and have a lot of I would say domain expertise in helping you decide what software is the best for you. And I think that that's something that differentiates us from a lot of our competitors is that we are not super focused on forcing you into a software that we necessarily have a lot of experience with. What we do is, and ideally we have a lot of notes, we have a lot of research on what's out there, but for the clients that have more sophisticated needs, it's worthwhile to do, you know, like 4 hours worth of research on the frameworks that we know about and trying to decide the pros and cons of each and then choose the one that best suits you. Usually favoring the ones that are the easiest to actually edit for the end user, you know. One problem I see all the time with WordPress is how once you start doing more than blogging with it, like if you have a lot of static like a lot of pages that you need to be able to edit weird fields that are not blog posts, it's really not intuitive how to edit those fields and how to make the whole website feel consistent.
Right.
So WordPress, it's a very powerful tool, but I think it's important for any technology partner to at least consider the options and, you know, choose the best choice for you, not necessarily the best choice for them.
Right.
Well, I'm glad that you offer the services ongoing because this is like a foreign language to me.
It's a foreign language to most
to many people, right?
And you know, just like any other content experts that we've had in here to talk about stuff for small businesses, you know, most small business owners did not go into business because they want to program their own website,
or
do their own
accounting. They're trying though these days.
They're trying, and that's great.
So many small businesses. I mean, got to hand it to them for the hustle. You know, it's a lot. But yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
No. That's exactly where I was going. You know, I think a lot of people are trying, and a lot of people are putting out some great content. But
that's what's important—the content. You know, that's really what's the most important. And I think that a lot of people think that you can really do good design and hire really good web developers, and your website's going to be successful, but content needs to be a huge part of your strategy to make your
content
website successful.
Is always king.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit briefly about the security aspect. There's been a lot in the news lately about hackers doing ransomware on websites and things like that.
Terrible.
What do you got up your sleeve to help businesses feel a little bit more secure about that?
Well, my understanding of that the malware that's going around is it's usually what we call an attack vector would be through email, and you'd open a file or something like that, and then the file in it has some software embedded that is designed to install itself on your computer and then monitor what you do and then find out where you store your sensitive files and then upload your files to their personal computers and then delete your files locally. And that's what this new malware that people are talking about does. And then these people, you know, that they don't have their files anymore. And sometimes these files are really important to them. Like it could be like, for example, some pictures that you had that you didn't have backed up somewhere, or business critical files that are worth, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars to you to get back because the amount of work, like just the cost of losing them is that high.
Sure.
So then they're trying to, these perpetrators are trying to ransom your files back to you. My advice is anybody who, even regularly, but anybody new to computers, young people too, they should go through like some amount of education to learn about good use of computers, knowing like how to kind of identify when an email looks malicious. If a file, like for example, if someone emails you and they may look like they are somebody you know, but the email address is weird, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like that's a really common situation where someone's imposing as someone else that mm-hmm. you trust. Mm-hmm. And then they post a file. Usually it's a generic email. Sometimes if they're really motivated, they'll like do a lot of homework to try to learn about you and try to make the email personalized. But most of the time they get lazy and they just make it kind of a generic email. And it'll include like a file attachment or something like that. Like, and be like, can you do me a favor and look at this file attachment or something?
And then, it's usually like a zip file, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be a zip. It can be a PDF. PDFs are really popular malware vehicles.
Really?
Yes. Yes, very much so. A lot of people don't keep their PDF software up to date. Mm. So if you, and these perpetrators, they watch, like the vulnerabilities are publicly known.
Really?
When they patch these vulnerabilities a lot of times. So once they're publicly known, then any perpetrator can study the press release on the vulnerability, develop a virus, computer virus, and then send it out. And anybody who hasn't updated their software recently is now way more vulnerable because now the entire world knows about that vulnerability. Mm.
You know what I mean? So every time I get one of those Microsoft Word critical updates, critical, which is like every other day, I should probably go ahead.
It's critical.
Yeah, I should do that.
I mean, yeah. It's unfortunate that it's so painful to update, you know? it really shouldn't be so painful. Like you have to reboot your computer all the time. And, yep. And everybody has a million tabs open in their web browser, and they're like, oh, I don't want to do that right now. I'm just going to wait. And then they ignore it, and then months go by. And
well, you know, 9 times out of 10, when I open a Word or Excel doc, you know, it's like, I got to get something done right now. And no, I'm not going to update this right now. I've got to get this done right now.
Anyway, I totally hear you there.
So backing up files to you mentioned backing up files.
Right. So first step is, you know, basic like learning of how to kind of like watch out for these sort of attacks that people do a lot of times through emails. But then definitely, like you just mentioned, just make sure that you back things up consistently. A lot of people I've heard have had a lot of success with Dropbox. Mm-hmm. So if you
backing up to the cloud.
Yeah, you can install the software on your computer that all it does is basically you tell it a folder that you want to keep backed up and you just leave it alone.
Yeah.
You never have to touch it again.
Yeah.
And then it'll just constantly, anytime you save something to that folder, it'll back it up constantly. So then if you ever had a serious computer crisis, you know, you didn't have access to your computer anymore, then you could always get those files back.
Yeah, we not only back everything up to multiple different cloud options, Google Drive, Dropbox, all those things, but we've also got external hard drives that would back up.
That's a really good idea. Yeah. And for those Apple users out there, there's a really easy backup method using the time capsule.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Apple has like their own proprietary backup software. I personally use it and love it because you can not just to recover files, but also you can see file history and stuff like that. And you can revert a file back to another point in time.
Nice.
Which is pretty cool.
Like, see, Michelle, this is a reason to go Apple.
What? Oh, no. Oh, no. Okay. Like, but I do like that.
How many times did you delete a file a few months ago and then...
Only to need it and that then you're Monday?
Like, yeah.
You may even moved it somewhere and you didn't know where you moved it to, but now you really need that file, but you know it was in this folder at one point. With Time Machine, you can be like, all right, I'm going to go back 3 months and see what files are in this folder, and then you can recover the file out like that.
Can we do that in real life? Time Machine, I like that.
Yeah, and it can be hooked up to your wireless network at home too, so you never actually have to think about it. It just automatically happens all the time in the background.
So how much space does that take up if it's automatically backing? I mean, at some point.
So it does have a method for what we call garbage collection. So it will
filter out some stuff.
It looks at how much memory you have and then starts to get rid of stuff as you start to use up your memory all the much. But depending on the size of your hard drive, you know, that's kind of like, and how much of your hard drive you've used. Yeah. Usually with Macs, they all come with like a solid state drive.
Massive.
Yeah. So they have less memory most of the time than a Windows computer. So it's usually not a big issue to store your files for a really long time. It kind of makes you have to be a little better about your memory usage because it doesn't give you as much. I sprung for the bigger drive on my computer. Yeah. But I deal with a lot of media files and video editing and stuff, so that takes up a lot of space.
Well, this is also your business.
Yeah, it's part of my business. Right. Yeah, the online marketing part, you know, content is king.
Well, Brian, you are out of SB Works now.
Yeah, love it.
It's a great space down there.
Yeah. Which is right down the street from you guys above Zeke's.
Yeah. Conveniently located above Zeke's.
I know. I don't envy that only because I already get enough caffeine as it is. And
no such thing.
I don't know if that'd be good or bad for me, but I do love Zeke's coffee. But yeah, working out of Five Points has been, I'd say, just wonderful.
Great.
You know, I've worked out of a lot of other co-working spaces in DC. My other favorite would be 1776, but they kind of have a different appeal. But working out of SB Works and Five Points together, they're really appealing to the Ward 5 businesses really heavily. They really have a good mission. They really care about the businesses in the area. And being around them really makes me better at my business.
Wow. What a great,
what a great plug.
Testimonial.
Yeah.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for being in here today to talk to us. So let our listeners know how they can track you down.
Okay. Yeah, sure. So if you're ever walking by Five Points, stop in, and I'm usually there. So I'd love to talk to you. My name's Brian, and I have a website, go figure, since I do websites.
That would be really weird if you didn't have a website, but we're glad that you do.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And what is that website?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. It's at https://www.benevolent.tech. You can also get it benevolenttech.com, but
it redirects.
But it redirects, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just because I know that a lot of people may get a little confused and mistype it or something like that. But the main address is .tech.
Great. Phone number, email, they can get
a
contact thing here on.
Yeah. So the best way to reach me is usually email. I'm brian@benevolent.tech.
Is that B-R-I-A-N?
Good question. It is B-R-I-A-N.
Great.
At benevolent.tech. And then like us, follow us on Facebook, you know, if you want to get updates. I also have a newsletter so one thing that I like to focus on my website is not only like explaining what we do and how we help businesses, but also have some self-help resources. So I've spent significant amount of time building up content in my website to self-help businesses too. So if you're a small business looking to learn more about online marketing and how to find how to select a developer, if you're thinking about hiring a web developer or something like that, that's a post that I'm going to post really soon. Definitely go check out my website and sign up for the newsletter to get updates when I'm posting new content.
Perfect. Very Thank good. You so much, Brian.
Thanks for coming in today, Brian.
Thanks you guys so much.
We'll talk to you soon.
Yep.
So now we welcome our second guest from Rhode Island Avenue, Manny Palavanpour from District Floor Depot. Welcome, Manny.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Yes. Thanks for joining us today. So tell our listeners about the District Floor Depot.
Besides the fact that you're the newest business
yes,
on
the
Rhode
newest
Avenue.
Business on Rhode Island Avenue.
Yeah, so just a little bit about us. We opened towards end of March. We started our, as we call it, the soft opening to basically work out all the kinks since this is a startup business. We have a pretty aggressive plan to be able to grow. We have our second location under construction as we speak, and it's going to be here in D.C. as well. It's in Southeast D.C., right off of the Goodhope Road. Mm-hmm. And I guess a little bit about how we came about this business. Over the years, while renovating hundreds of homes in D.C., Virginia, and Maryland, we found that we have a passion for home renovation and interior design. And we found creating beautiful places isn't in our DNA. And while doing that, we came across many things that were done right when it comes to hard surfaces and floor design, and at the same time, many things that were not done right. And we saw an opportunity and decided to come here in Rhode Island Avenue and open our first location. So that's how we became the District Floor Depot.
What kind of things are done wrong?
There are so many.
From briefly, just because floors really, I mean, we both live in old houses, Kyle, and our floors are, you know, old. So just thinking of new flooring and.
You know, I can tell you about the reliable sourcing. Things that you have heard in the news over the course of the most recent years, and mm-hmm. we pride ourselves to become the reliable source and of flooring. That's one. On a daily basis, I hear it from the customers, bait and switch. Mm-hmm. They advertise certain promotions, but they're not really there. And that's where we thought we can come into the game and just differentiate ourselves. We have all of our prices posted. There are no gimmicks, no hidden agendas. Every item on the floor has its price. And it's available. As far as the services that we provide, again, we don't have any hidden agenda. I mean, just to give you a good example, we have a 50% off installation, and it is truly a 50% off installation versus some of the things that you find. They call it 50%, but the prices went up last week, and now it's coming down to 50%. And those are the things that we just want to be able to do right and, again, be the responsible, reliable source for our customers.
What type of flooring do you all sell at Floor Depot?
We have about 250 different styles from engineered to solid hardwood. Bamboo and cork, those are the renewables that we have. Very popular these days, luxury vinyl. In the industry, as well as luxury vinyl. And we have a small assortment of porcelain tiles. Those are our hard surfaces. And that really came from the neighborhood. On a daily basis, when we opened the doors, we were going to specialize on
right,
hardwood.
From this neighborhood.
Right,
well, obviously.
Right here in the neighborhood. On a daily basis, from the time we
People
were building
came
the store, people came in and asked for ceramic tile, personal tiles, and we said, okay, so we got to bring a small assortment of that and have that on display as well, and we were able to do that. We have a few vanities and countertops as well, just, again, based on the request that has come in from the neighborhood of residents
coming in. Barely open a few days and weeks, and you're already doing custom orders. This is fantastic.
Well, you know, that's the great part about the businesses on Rhode Island Avenue. They really care. And I'm not saying other businesses don't, but, I mean, we've seen it firsthand with our businesses that they listen to their customers.
Yep.
And even in your case, they weren't even your customers yet because your doors weren't open and you were already listening to them. So right. What are some of the popular flooring types? Maybe the most popular, different price?
What's the trend?
Yeah, what is the trend?
Yeah, the trend and in the industry, they call the gray a five-year trend, as they call them. The gray has made a comeback last year, and it seems to be pretty popular, and it seems to become the trend every 5 to 6 years or so.
Gray is in
gray color.
Gray-colored wood.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gray color stained, obviously, floors, wider planks these days. We have some that go as wide as 7.5 inch wide. Those seems to be pretty popular. Being here in D.C., there are a lot of old hard pine, and we do have customers coming in and looking for pine flooring as well. And I would say the latest trend is basically the distressed look, as we call it, whether it's the
wire
brush.
Oh, my floors are now in fashion.
How convenient.
Yes, good. Okay. Yeah.
So those are the new trends that we see.
Where do you get your products?
We get them directly from the mill, and that's one of the great things about District Floor Depot. So we are able to pass on the savings to our customers.
You cut out the middleman.
Cut out the middleman. Most of, and not all, but most of our material come directly from the mills. We are proud of our Patriot Plank, which is all made in USA. We have them from the south and the north. Just a little background on that. You know, further north you go, the lumber goes through, or the trees go through a tough climate. So you get a denser, better quality of product. So we get them from all the way up north as well as the south.
So what's the difference in, and I don't know the different types of woods, but sometimes people have the shiny floors and the dull floors. What's the main kind of difference in that? Or is there a difference in life expectancy or...
There is no difference in life expectancy. The number one thing that I always tell the customers, they come in and sometimes they ask for bamboo because they have heard about bamboos being dense and really hard. The flooring is tested based on what's called the Janka rating. Mm-hmm. It's a Janka ball that's dropped on the hard surface, and they measure the density of the wood. And when you get a high sheen, to kind of explain it that way, on a floor, so it's gonna get dent, it's gonna get scratched, and it's gonna show it a lot more than getting a low sheen or a distressed, as we call them, wired brushed or hand scraped material. They just do a better job of hiding it. I always tell the customers, I cannot possibly give you a floor that's not gonna get scratched or dent,
right?
Even if it's bamboo, which you know, everything is compared to red oak. Red oak being the median, they measure that at 1290, bamboo goes up to 4,000 to 5,000, and it will still get dent and it will still get scratched.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you drop something heavy enough on steel, it'll
right.
get dent.
Right.
Right.
Right. So. What are some things that people should consider when they're thinking about getting new flooring? If we're talking about not a new home, but an existing home, what are some of the things they should keep in mind?
Things that they should keep in mind. I think the first has to be the color and the style that they like. A lot of times, the stores individuals will want to sell you what would be most profitable to them. But the flooring choice that you make is something you're going to live with for many, many years. We find it in the industry and all the research that we did that. During the time that you live in your house, you basically replace your floors maybe once. After that, you just maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
So you absolutely have to pick something that you really like and you're going to enjoy. That's one. It's very difficult to pick flooring based on a picture.
Mm-hmm.
Our own experience of samples that we see online of the pictures from the different mills and suppliers that we get versus the actual product is an absolute different world. That's another one. getting bigger samples to be able to tell what the floor is going to look like would be the other piece. Give you an example of like a natural hickory. Hickory will have the natural characteristics of the wood, but sometimes you get a sample that is all clear, natural color wood, but the customer gets it installed and they have all these darker brown pieces that are coming in. So I think those are the key things to consider, that you do your research. Don't take people's word for it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I can sit here and tell you that we started this just to do it right, and we will tell you everything there is about that floor. But do your research and see if that's exactly what you're finding.
I know one of the things that my wife would like to have in our house is the heated floors.
Meryl's getting fancy with some heated floors.
Radiant heating underneath the floors. Is that something that can go under hardwoods, or does it need to go under tile?
It's more often done under tile, just because it heats up the ground surface. Hardwood, and the challenge with the hardwood, and you know, every time we tell this to our customers, the wood itself, including furniture, doors, all wood will expand and contract.
Sure.
During it in its entire life. So when you put a heat under a surface, that flooring surface is going to react to it in different ways. So it could expand, where it's going to start pushing against the walls, or it might start buckling up on you. So I would say there are circumstances where you can put those in, and that's where the engineered flooring have come into play in many ways. But in many situations, it would not be recommended to have a hardwood floor, just because the wood is going to react to that temperature that it's receiving.
All right. Now I can go.
Now you can go home and say, no, it's not possible.
Not until we can afford the tile to go over it.
Right. So I've heard that weather is a factor in when you should change your floors. Is that true?
It is. And, you know, part of what we do, especially with the solid and also with the engineered flooring, as I mentioned, they expand and contract. Mm-hmm. So in the warmer climate, the wood wants to expand. And depending on what part of the tree that wood was taken from, it might go sideways or it might go up and down. Mm-hmm. So you have to really truly acclimate the wood to the environment that it's going to coexist. You know, when they tell you that they will come and install next day a wood flooring, well, it's coming from a warehouse that might be kept in 60 degrees and it's going to go to your house, which you're going to maintain it at 70 or 80. So that wood, after it's installed, it's going to react. And you're going to have all these ups and downs on your flooring. So, yes, it does play a factor. One of the things we do at District Floor Depot, we have checks and balances where we inspect the home based on the conditions. We bring the material, we stage it in the house for a minimum of 72 hours, so it acclimates within the environment that is going to exist. And then we start the installation process, and there are always surprises. Because until you remove the existing floor, you don't know what's under it or the condition that it's in. And so if you have to stop the project, make the corrections, and that's one of the things that we pride ourselves that, as I said at the beginning, we are going to start this and we're going to do it right, is what we are doing today.
So your installers can fix, like, if we rip up our horrible vinyl in our kitchen and we find some squishy boards or something like that underneath, your installers can help fix that.
We can, absolutely, yes. Right. And that's part of our services that we provide. Our installation is guaranteed for a year, and nobody wants to hear the squeaking noise from the newly installed floor. So we have to make sure that the subfloor is absolutely leveled, prepared before we do the installation.
Yeah,
that's terrific. So the installation is done by you all, District Depot.
It is, yes.
And then you all are designers, so you can kind of, I guess you would come to people's homes with samples?
We do.
Or do you pick them up? How does it work?
So many of, and we've had several customers here in Rhode Island Avenue, and I've taken the samples to their home. Mm-hmm. Lighting structure is going to be different in the house, so they got to be able
to see it. It's important to be able to see it there.
We have given them large planks to say, you know, why don't you take this home and decide, you know, true story of customer trying to decide between a 3-inch wide versus a 5-inch. And they couldn't decide. They're, you know, going back and forth. One wants 3, other one wants 5, and said, just take both of them home, sit on it, think about it for the next few days, and mm-hmm. then make your decision. So, you know, those are the things that we can do as a local business of that personal touch that we can provide to our customers.
Do you all provide any type of aftercare instructions for the floors? And because I know it can be important with wood. How to take care of it?
We do, and they have a good assortment of what we believe good maintenance material at our store, and we explain those to our customers. We have had quite a few happy customers here right off of Rhode Island Avenue in the most recent weeks. We haven't been open that long, but we've had quite a few happy customers that have come in, and we do give them the instructions of what needs to happen. You know, you don't want to take soap and water and mop your floors. Again, the wood is going to react to the water and that type of stuff. Hopefully that answered.
Oh, yeah, question. Definitely. Yeah.
So if there's one thing you could caution potential flooring buyers to not do, whether it's design or choices or like where they're going to put it, what would be the one thing that you see people making poor decisions on?
You know, I have seen... to give you an example, I've seen solid wood being installed on a concrete floors. Now, why you can't do that, and we wouldn't sell to a customer that wants to install it in their basement.
Yeah.
You cannot put the hardwood on an area where it's going to be a lot of moisture, and concrete will hold moisture all the time. And so that would be a no-no for us. And when we tell the customers your only other choice is to go with engineered, misconception is that the engineered flooring is not wood. Actually, the top layer, top veneer that is put on the engineered flooring is wood. They put the plywood under it to help with that moisture content that is going to be coming from the from the concrete.
I'm looking at your website now with the engineered wood choices. They're beautiful. I would want this.
And they are. And, you know, when you want to get the wider planks, when you get into a 7.5-inch wide or 6-inch wide, you have to go with the engineered flooring just because expands and contracts. So when you get those white planks in your home, and if it's solid, you're going to see all these ups and downs within the flooring. So the engineered flooring have become very popular. I would say, I think last I read in the industry, about half of the flooring installed as far as hardwood are engineered flooring.
So since you said that your prices are right there and right up front, what's the ballpark, and how do you charge?
We truly have solid hardwood starting at $1.99. Mm-hmm. Currently, we have 3 different options left, from maple to pine and to red oak. Starting point of $1.99 a mm-hmm. square feet. And
how extravagant could you go?
It can go as high as, I want to say, I can't remember top of my head, but I think $1,469, and those are reclaimed.
And what does that mean?
It's a lot nicer for me to do the demonstration at the store. So when the customers are touching the sample, mm-hmm. and they say, why is this so expensive when we have all these other items at $2, $3, $4? And the best thing that I like to tell them is, ma'am, you're touching possibly a 300-year-old history. And that's what the reclaimed wood are. Mm-hmm. They are reclaimed from factories, and it could truly be 300-400 years old that are made to beautiful hardwood flooring. And so that's where the prices go up as high as 14.
Sure. So you've got a grand opening coming up.
We do. June 9th is our grand opening. Our celebration will start around noon, and we'll have ribbon cutting as well as refreshments and some door prizes, etc. So we wanted to make sure we get everything right before we set up the grand opening and do the soft opening, work out all the kinks, and we believe we are ready. For this grand opening.
That's terrific, and congratulations on opening up your first store, and then you're going to be opening up your second store pretty soon, so that's exciting.
We are hopefully we'll be operational by July August time frame with the second location.
Wow. Yeah. Very good.
That's
very good.
Very, very good. So if our listeners that haven't come in to see you want to know where you are and how to get in touch with you, where would they go?
So they can visit our website, which is districtfloordepot.com. They can come to our showroom, and it's a beautiful showroom. I know Kyle has been there, 1600 Rhode Island Avenue, right around the corner from here. And they can call us. Our phone number is 202-652-1660.
Great.
Yep, and for those of you who are familiar with the public option, they are directly across the street from the public option. So shop, drink, shop. It all works out.
It's all the same. Yep. Well, Manny, thanks for coming in and telling us about District Floor Depot, and welcome to the neighborhood.
Thank you very much.
We will see
pleasure.
You and everybody that's listening on June 9th for your grand opening and ribbon cutting.
Absolutely. We hope to see everyone there.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. It is time to check in with Casey at Good Food Market. Casey, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you, Kyle?
Good.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well.
Good. What's going on at the market this week?
We want to thank everybody just for their support, you know, these past few weeks. The community's been really supportive, and it's just another opportunity for us to recognize how valued we are here in the community and just how important it is for us to be here for Woodridge. And we love doing it, so I just wanted to say that first and, you know, really acknowledge it because it means everything to our small staff, a lot of which do live in the neighborhood.
For listeners that aren't aware, Good Food Market was held up a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And community outpouring and support has been fantastic. We have great neighbors.
We do have great neighbors.
Yeah, it's wonderful. But you know, we're not going anywhere, and we're staying busy at the store. This is the time that everybody's, you know, getting ready for school to be over, planning their summer vacations. Unfortunately, that means a lot of late spring produce for us. So we're seeing a lot of these melons coming out of Georgia and Florida, creeping into the Carolinas as well. So we've got all the melons you can want. We got the mini watermelons. We've got cantaloupes and honeydew, and I'm sure everyone's seen the watermelon guy in the truck.
Yep.
He's there. If you want a big watermelon. I mean, granted, we've got the little one, but I'll shout out that guy as well because he sure is sweet.
Nice. So before we went on air today, Michelle was extolling the virtues of the Lord of the Pies, key lime pie.
Key lime is definitely the best. It's my favorite too.
It's the only one I've had since you first talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I've had it twice. I did share it, unlike some people.
You did,
Kyle.
Share it?
I did.
Wow, that's really generous. I ate the whole thing by myself.
I thought it was generous of me as
it's
well.
It's a single serving. Come on.
I shared it, and it was... Oh, I've talked about it and talked about it. I've talked about it so much that now I have to bring one this weekend to someone else that likes key lime pie.
Point, right?
So we'll see if I don't eat it on the way there.
Yeah, right? It really is phenomenal. And Dave, who makes them, you know, just him and mostly his parents that bust out these pies. And he's so sweet and he does such a great job. And we're really happy to support a local business out of Union Kitchen because he crushes the pie game. He does such a good job.
Yeah. Perfect. Ooh. Perfect crust. Not too sweet. I could go on and on.
The perfect tang. Yeah.
Yep. And their quiches.
The really, quiches are good. Really yeah, good the veggie's quiche. Definitely my favorite.
Yeah.
We've been nagging him to see when these peach pies are going to come in.
Peach.
But that's another one of the ones that we're waiting for here in produce land, too. We want to see more of that stone fruit. And we're going to get more of that. We're going to get the cherries the apricots, the plums, and peaches. That's definitely all on its way, especially locally in this area, not just, you know, further down south on the East Coast. But as soon as he gets a peach pie, oh, man.
Watch
out. I'm
going to
get some vanilla ice cream. I'm going to go to town.
I need you to call me when that comes.
So
I literally think we might have to do pre-orders, yeah, so everybody make sure they get their share.
Yeah, because I'm here to tell you, as somebody who grew up in peach country in Texas, that an 8-inch round peach pie is a single serving.
It is round. That's impressive, Kyle. But I'm sure.
So no one's
warm pie in the season. I'm sure I could do it too.
Oh my god, yes. Oh my god, yes.
Well, you're definitely not sharing the peach.
No, heck no.
No way.
Heck no. Yeah, we'll because we'll talk to you on the Friday before the show airs. So as soon as you get those pies in,
yeah,
we're talking
to,
about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right. So how's the basil looking? Is it in yet?
Yeah, so we're actually now working with Dreaming Out Loud, which is a really wonderful nonprofit here in the city. They grow a lot of herbs and leafy green vegetables out of Blind Wino, that graffiti church that's in South.
Oh, I love that place.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a great event space.
It really
they do
is.
A lot of arts projects there, mm-hmm. but they also have the community garden that's outside. And it's run by Chris Bradshaw, who really is just such a pioneer in the DC food scene. And he's been really supportive of everything that we've been doing here for, you know, 2.5 years. And we've been wanting to carry his stuff for a good while, and they're finally ready. It's beautiful packaging. It's all, you know, organically managed. It's definitely not used with any pesticides or herbicides, but we have his herbs now, which is fantastic. We do have some basil now, but we also have mint and rosemary, sage, dill.
Mm.
Fresh dill in the spring is just one of my favorite things. I put it on everything, and it's so refreshing.
Yeah. There's nothing like a really good traditional gazpacho with tons of dill in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've been thinking about doing some cold soups. So I'd be curious to have people come in and let me know if that's something they'd be interested in. Because as the weather warms, you know, we've had a few people still ask for warm soup. But we'd like to try some cold soups. Do a gazpacho, maybe.
See, this is what we were just talking about. The personalized services from our small businesses on Rhode Island Avenue. Where else can you get that?
Right, right, right.
We're so lucky to live in this neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, like, we love food, and that's the best part about our customers, that they come in and they want to stay, they want to talk about it. I put in the orders every week, and if there's something that you want, I'll have it in by Friday. You know, we're willing to try it because you're probably not the only one that wants it.
That's great.
Well, you know, peach pie. That's all I'm going to say about that.
That's all I was going to say.
So how's the
case deck about?
How's the summer beer cooler looking?
His other favorite.
So the beer cooler is overflowing right now. We are busting at the seams. I have definitely overordered because sometimes I forget some of the weird new things that I put in pre-order for. They show up at the shop. make space.
Surprise.
We got the, what is that thing called? It's the Flying Dog Old Bay beer. Dead Rise, that's what it's called. And it comes in cans now, which is super fun. And it's not as scary as it sounds. Old Bay beer is still pretty mild.
Sounds like the perfect accompaniment to some crabs.
Exactly. If you're going to be doing a crab feast, you got to pick up some Old Bay beer. It's only about 5% ABV, so it's pretty drinkable. And we have that in a 12-pack if you want, you know, 2 dozen Old Bay beers, but then you can also buy them by the single as well.
I mean, if you're going to have a bushel of crabs.
We've got a lot of white wines right now that are super refreshing. Lots of rosés, so good for outdoor drinking.
All right. Flavor of the month from ice cream?
We are experimenting a lot with Halo Top. So as much as we love Trickling Springs here, Trickling Springs has been a standby, you know, since day one. But this Halo Top ice cream trend is really taking off. We've tried a few flavors now, and I think the next one I'm going to bring in is Red Velvet.
Ooh.
That had a big request for that one.
Yeah.
But that's the, it's low-cal, high-protein. And it's only about, most pints are about 200 calories or so.
For the entire pint?
Hold on.
Wait.
The whole thing.
Hold on. Okay. Now you caught me with some diet ice cream. I need to.
It's diet ice cream.
Okay. Doctor approved. How sweet is it if it's diet ice cream and filled with protein?
You know, it's the sweetness is still what you'd expect in ice cream. But I would say that the creaminess is a little bit different, right? So it's definitely not that coating your tongue milk fat that the trickling springs and the Marengos does. But it's got a good flavor. They do recommend that you leave it out on the countertop for a little bit just to let it soften up. And that's a good recommendation because right out of the freezer, it is a little...
It's a little much.
A little bit like diet ice cream.
Okay. But you give it a few minutes and then it's...
You give it a few minutes, it softens up, and it's, you know, it's still diet ice cream,
I'm going to try this. It'll satisfy the sweet tooth. So
it'll curb the sweet tooth, that's all for right. sure. Yeah.
Very good.
And if, you know, if you don't eat the whole pint, great. But if you do, apparently it's not so bad for you.
Okay. Very good.
Yep.
So remind...
Don't watch those sugars, though. I'm not going to advocate, you know, only eating Halo Top.
Of course. Right.
Would be responsible.
So why don't you remind our listeners where they can find Good Foods?
Absolutely. So Good Food Markets is at 2006 Rhode Island Avenue, around 20th in Rhode Island. We're online at goodfoodmarkets.com. We can you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Engage with us there. And come on in and give us a recommendation. We're always looking for new stuff every season.
So I'm going to be a Main Street manager for a minute and remind listeners that one of the best ways that they can support Good Food Markets in good times and tough times, whatever, is to actually go shop there.
Absolutely.
And, yes,
be warm bodies in the store because that makes a difference, not only from a safety perspective, but because we want to see you out there supporting our local businesses, and local businesses want to see you and provide you with peach pies and
ice cream and beer and vegetables.
All right.
Thank you so much, Kyle. Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks,
Casey.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, that's going to wrap up another episode of Rhode Island Avenue Radio for us today. See you next week. See you, Michelle.
See ya.